Good morning and welcome to Studio 619. I'm Rick Helton. Coming up a little later in the show, WFTL's Stephanie Sanders brings you the conclusion of our two-part series, Teaching Peace, about Louisville programs designed to help the city's youth break the cycle of violence in their neighborhoods. First, though, a look ahead to what the economy could bring in 2007. Before his swearing-in last week, Louisville Mayor Jerry Abramson spoke with WFPL about his goals and plans for the upcoming year. The always optimistic mayor says he will focus on economic opportunities as well as enhancing the quality of life. And there are reasons to be optimistic about the upcoming year. The new arena project has been given the go-ahead. The Ford Motor Company plants remain open, and developers announced an even larger museum plaza project. But there are reasons for concern, too. Louisville area home sales fell by 5% in 2006, and even though those Ford plants remain open, the company's future is uncertain, and rising costs could threaten the Ohio River Bridges project. WFPL's Stan Cook talked with Sean Ridley, the CEO of Atlas Brown, a Louisville investment advisory firm, about the state of the economy and what to expect in 2007.
Before taking a look at 2007, let's reflect for a few moments on the economy in 2006, the U.S. economy. Would it be fair to say that most people would agree is pretty robust in 2006 up until, I guess, maybe toward the end when started getting a little bit of a burp in the housing market and some concerns started to kind of bubble up, but nothing of any major significance seemed to happen. What's your take on how things went for 2006?
2006 has been a wonderful year. I would think if we went and had a little conversation with a Federal Reserve governor, that they would say that it is the economy right now is exactly where they want to be. Nice growth without inflation running out too much. The job market's strong, but not too strong. Wages are moving up a little bit. But the housing market has put a little bit of a break on the economy, which is good because the economy was really quite strong. Commodity prices were moving up. Energy prices, of course, have helped the economy as they fell back in the fall. So all in all, I think the economy is doing quite well.
I know initially there were a few concerns, as you know, some would probably expect when you have a change in leadership and Ben Bernanke comes on board as chairman of the Federal Reserve, but it seems like things have worked out fairly well.
They have. You know, the Federal Reserve has done a magnificent job over the last couple of decades of really putting the economy in a much more predictable mode. I mean, we don't have the big booms and busts today that we used to have back in the 60s and 70s and before that. So he has done a wonderful job. The GDP number came out for the third quarter, and it was a little bit less than people thought, about 2%. I thought that was really actually good news because the interest rates after the Federal Reserve raised them 17 times in a row have paused, and this last the last time they met, they came out and said that they may raise them again. I think with the economy slowing because of the housing market, that they're not going to raise interest rates again. What's interesting is the Federal Reserve has never, after a series of interest rates increases, and then a pause, has never raised interest rates after that pause. They've always lowered them. And I suspect that in 2007, we're going to see interest rates on the short end come down.
You know, I don't think it's too much out of the ordinary for some folks when you see what happened with the housing industry and a bit of a burp, so to speak. But it's, you know, some folks are very quick, tend to be a bit nervous about things when something happens. They tend to jump on it, I think, fairly quickly, saying, oh, here we go. But from what it appears to me, the strength of the economy that we've experienced in the past year is really based on a solid foundation.
It is on a solid foundation. I mean, again, you know, jobs are growing, wages are growing, which is really important. Now, while the economy is not, while the real estate market hasn't, you know, done great in 2006, the stock market has picked up the place, you know, and has helped build household wealth through people's retirement plans and savings. And if we go back all the way back to 99 and 2000, as the stock market turned there, real estate was fine. And when 9/11 happened, that's when the economy was most vulnerable. But we only had one or two quarters of negative growth. Negative growth, that's kind of a Oxymoron. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So, I guess we went into a slight recession, but the real estate market, because of the Federal Reserve's engineering and lowering rates, really picked up. So the economy, as we know, is very complex, and just because one area is not doing well, there's several other areas that are doing well.
And I think that's something that the general public has learned more this year than perhaps understood before, is the complexity of the economy, how one area can, you know, pick up another area. You can look at one area and you can say, well, it's not performing as we would hope or not as well, but when you bring all the pieces together, it's doing well. Why would you say the economy has been doing so well?
Well, I think that the economy has become a global economy. And the world, we talked about this last time, I think, mm-hmm. that the world's flat, and it really is. It's getting smaller. Technology has really allowed companies from Kentucky to, you know, Indonesia to India to all interact with one another and utilize each other's strengths. And so the economy is not only very complex, but it's global these days. So if the United States has experienced a little softness in one area, China or the micro-Asian countries or South America or Africa countries may be doing well and picking that up, the slack for the maybe the slight growth that was happening in the United States or Europe.
And not only has things really become interconnected in an extraordinary way, but the speed at which information occurs now, it's in comparison to the way it was before, it's pretty instant. So things, something can happen, but honestly, it doesn't seem like it's going to have a whole lot of time to set in.
That is just a magnificent point, Stan. 20 years ago, the fax machine was just coming on grid. The personal computer was just coming on grid. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have ATM cards. Certainly no internet. And the computer was about the size of the room I'm sitting in right now. Nowadays, business transactions, which a big thing in 2006 has been, the mega mergers and the private equity firms buying big, giant, well-known companies. All of that's due to technology and the flow of information, instantaneous flow of information, and the instantaneous flow of money around the world. So all of these things have played a big part in sustaining a steady economy.
Now, as we take a look toward 2007, I know you've probably heard this a little bit over the time, but there are, some rumblings, that as well as things have gone for us in 2006 here toward the end, some people have the opinion that it's, started to slow down a little bit. And there's even that little bit of a whisper of recession in 2007.
Well, a recession is something which I don't see right now. However, that could change very quickly. It's always something unusual happens. I think if I was sitting here a year ago and we talked about what was going to happen in 2006, at the time it didn't look like the Democrats were going to take over control of Congress. And that happened, and the American people, which was, I think, the biggest story of 2006, that actually helped the stock market in a lot of ways, because those of us on kind of Wall Street, we like thoughtfulness in Washington. We don't like it either way, where it's just all Democrats or all Republicans, because then the country gets a little bit out of tilt. But if you have a little bit of, I would say balance in the, both not only the executive but the legislature and the judicial branches, then it seems like I think more rational and thoughtful processes come out. So something unexpected is going to happen in 2007. The thing there is, I think the real wild card is energy prices. If we keep energy prices kind of stable where they are, then I think the economy is going to be just fine. If energy moves up while the real estate market has, taken a pause and starts turning down, that's going to put inflationary pressures on our economy, and then all of a sudden the inflationary pressures may cause the Federal Reserve to reverse maybe an easing thought or a lowering of interest rates and go into a mode of having to increase interest rates. which would be a triple whammy. Real estate prices declining, energy prices going up, and interest rates going up, the cost of money going up. That wouldn't be very good.
And the fact is, the competition that we as a country now have for the oil has really stiffened, especially from China and places like that. So do you see that as one of the key factors that could come involved with oil prices and what we might have to pay for energy is what's going to be required, you know, from other countries?
No doubt about that. China is not only a stiff competitor on the world stage and politics nowadays, but also, you know, economic might. But the demand that they're putting on the natural resources, the hard assets, things like lumber and steel and energy, you know, whether it's oil or natural gas, is tremendous. So,
yeah, I talked to someone who returned from China, a trip to China recently, and they said it was as if a new factory, a new building is going up almost weekly China, that it's booming to that extent.
Well, it is booming, and it's truly a land grab over there in China. And I have some business partners who do a lot of work in China, and so they said that while that's happening, one of the real negative byproducts of this, what's happening in China, is the environment. I mean, the rivers are sludge, the air is just toxic, and it's a very unhealthy kind of existence for people, and there's no regulation to control that. All of these play a big part, and so one of the things is that's important to the economy, and it's like energy prices and the demand for energy, is just because energy prices fell in the fall does not mean that people should not keep it on the forefront of their minds and look for alternative energy sources, look for, you know, paying, you know, contributing in some small way. Whether it's riding a bicycle or taking the tarp once a week, or, you know, trading in their four-wheel drive for, you know, kind of a conversion car. So,
yeah, and it's easy for us, I think, individually as well as collectively as a community, when things kind of even off, it's easy for us to become a little more comfortable and not think of things in that term that you're talking about and kind of get lulled into a false sense of security. But on the other hand, we have seen some, I think, a bit of a surprising turnout of some alternative type of cars. They're really starting to take a look at those kind of hybrid cars now. They're actually, you can see them on the road, not many, but they're there. There's I noticed in Indiana as well as here in Kentucky, they're starting to build some I guess it would be biodiesel kind of, you know, alternative fuel plants. How much of a role is that going to play as far as the economy is concerned when you're talking about that energy situation, that continuation or of that, you know, alternative fuel? Is that a big part of this?
It's a enormous part of this. And to put it in perspective, each recession, going back to the oil embargo back in the early 70s. Ever since then, every recession has been caused by a spike in energy prices. That's what made this recent spike in energy prices so surprising, that it didn't, you know, put a big pause in the economy or cause it to go in recession. So the movement towards alternative energy sources is tremendously important, because if we don't continue to push that way into biodiesel, which is wonderful, and these alternative solar power or even green construction. I noticed Boston City Council said that every building has to be green that's built going forward for energy conservation. If we don't continue to pursue that, we are going to become more and more dependent on foreign policy of foreign nations, which is not a place I think the United States of America wants to be. We need to be self-sufficient, and to do that, we need to find these other alternative resources. And then that way, we don't become hostage to other people's policies.
I have a few minutes left. I'd like to take those minutes and focus a little bit, if we could, on our local economy here in Louisville. We have the arena finally solidified in the sense that they are moving ahead on that. We have this futuristic high-rise that's going to be built down on the riverfront. I know some people hate the design and others love it, but not only is it going to be built, but you know, they recently announced it's going to be even bigger than what they originally were planning on. The Ford Motor Company, there was a lot of concern about plant closures. Hasn't happened, but yet it's still a little bit shaky, and the Bridges Project all of a sudden is a shaky situation. What do you see the local economy looking like in 2007?
Well, I moved here 15 years ago from Boston, and I have to say I have never seen Louisville's, not only the community itself, but the economy overall in Jefferson County, be as robust and dynamic as it is today. I mean, you mentioned the arena project, the museum plaza, which is, the design is interesting, and I'm not sure how I feel about the design, but, good for that investor group. I mean, they are really making a statement and putting their foot forward and investing in Louisville, which is just fantastic. But we've seen a lot of other projects be announced and go up. We do need to get Spaghetti Junction fixed. It was a Monday when it was announced how much it really was going to cost for the bridges and Spaghetti Junction. It said Spaghetti Junction would be, completed by 2024. That was the right-hand column. On the left-hand column of the Courier-Journal, it said that the United States is going to build a space station on the moon so that humans couldn't inhabit the moon by 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, we can't get some roads done, and they're going to be having people sitting on the moon. But this has to be a community effort, and we have to think about it not only for, how we're going to do it in the next 10 or 20 years, but for the next 100 years. And I don't certainly know the answers, but is it light rail? Is it this 8664 effort that's going on by Tyler Allen and folks? I don't know, but it has to be a community effort. And I think we all have to shed our previous notion of what we wanted to do and start over and have put almost like a whiteboard and say, okay, what are our community needs? And how do we want to get this accomplished in a way that's cost-effective?
And it's not only, significant for those of us who live here just from a transportation standpoint, but it is significant from an economic standpoint as well.
Absolutely. It is tremendously important that we get the Spaghetti Junction and the bridges ideas fixed from an economic standpoint. One of the big areas of Louisville economy is distribution. We are like the distribution hub of the United States with the UPS, but the highway system and the river. And if we can't keep this highway system, clogged, free from congestion and, erosion, it's very much going to hurt our economy. So it is an incredibly important near-term and long-term project that needs all of, everyone in the community's focus.
Sean Ridley with Atlas Brown, we are out of time. We do appreciate you coming in. We appreciate your insight, and we look forward to speaking with you again sometime in 2007 to see how things are going.
Thank you, Stan. I appreciate it.
More information about Sean Ridley, Atlas Brown, and the U.S. economy can be found at our website. Go to WFPL.org and click on Studio 619 under Select a Program. When we come back, WFPL Stephanie Sanders explores the means and methods behind Louisville programs that hope to break the cycle of violence by relating to the city's teenagers on a personal level. You're in Studio 619 on WFPL. Welcome back to Studio 619. I'm Rick Heldet. Coming up a little later in the show, WFPL's Laura Ellis speaks with a software developer who's trying to put a stop to those pesky felines who like to walk on computer keyboards. First, though, we have the conclusion of our series called Teaching Peace. In last week's edition, WFPL's Stephanie Sanders shared the story of a startup program called Operation Hope. It deals with breaking the cycle of violence among Louisville's young people, particularly those in the African-American community. Today, Stephanie speaks in-depth with the leaders of Operation Hope and other community leaders who are trying to tackle the same problem.
Catch your breath. Catch your breath while you go up the ramp.
This camp is part of a growing youth program in Louisville called Operation Hope. At the center of the organization are Kenny Boyd and Eddie Woods, two men who joined forces and resources to start it.
King of the mountain, baby. King of the mountain. Yeah.
Leading that charge of cheers for teens who made it to the top of Alpine Tower at the group's summer retreat is Kenny Boyd. His childhood of violence, poverty, and homelessness called him to the life he leads today.
And what I wanted to do was to reach out to young brothers because, see, I knew what it's like to not to raise, to have no role models. I knew what it's like to grow up without a father. You know what I mean? And I knew that my role models, the people that I looked up to, were pimps, players, hustlers, and dope dealers. And I knew what was the ending of that.
Now he's trying to give Louisville's youngsters positive role models they can learn to trust. He started a program called Youth Alive in 1998, but wanted a way to get more to the heart of Louisville's gang activity. He joined with Eddie Woods, who runs an organization called The Life Institute, to form Operation Hope. Eddie says they've been able to point some troubled teens in the right direction.
We always dealt with the ones who got kicked out of programs, who couldn't go on field trips, who we would get reports from, even in some cases, churches and law enforcement, that you need to get with this kid, because this kid is not going to make it unless somebody intervenes.
He adds Operation Hope is growing in participation, mostly because it tackles the issues of youth violence with positive methods.
A program for doing early intervention, a program for giving the kids who think violence is a good thing to do or that violence is a first choice, a chance to have peace as a first choice.
Another familiar voice from this summer's Operation Hope retreat is Daryl Aniton, who heads up Louisville's Office of Youth Development. He made the more than 30-minute drive to the retreat to deliver one message to the camp's attendees.
Always remember that we love.
Yep.
We love.
Daryl Aniton is the first to agree there's no one best method to reach teenagers who may be trapped in a cycle of violence, but he finds those three words can turn attitudes around.
When you tell them you love them, they just stop and listen to what you have to say, because I believe that many of them have been crying out for someone who truly cares about them. So I think it's an important part of working with young people is ensuring that they know and understand that you love them.
Aniton doesn't think youth violence is an over-dramatized problem in Louisville, but he does think many kids don't see the point in achievement because sometimes it gets overlooked.
Too often we're anxious to watch the television and see the bad news, but we're not paying as much attention to the good news. And because of that, many media outlets are airing the bad news and the violence and things that are going on in the community when there are kids who are accomplishing great things and their accomplishments go unnoticed.
Another initiative called the Peace Education Program recognizes those accomplishments and puts them to work in a system of peer mentors.
These guys are going to be trouble.
The executive director of the program is Eileen Blanton. She also took time out of her Saturday, along with a couple of teenage leaders from her program, to teach team building games at Operation Hope's summer retreat. This is just one of many offerings from the Peace Education Program, offerings that stress involvement of teenagers as mentors, and not just the ones who have already found a way out of violence.
You know, you have to be willing to have young people who are on the edge of trouble, who have been in trouble, who have been in fights, to also be the mediators, because they are going to lend a credibility to your program that well-behaved youth won't.
Blanton says teaching peace to young people is more than just a matter of changing their attitudes and lifestyles.
You can't say, oh, everybody be nice, when you have children who are out in the neighborhoods where they can be shot because they're wearing the wrong color. So you have to say to children, we understand that in the neighborhood you may have to fight. We want to create safe places in the school, in the community center, in your place of worship, where you don't have to fight, until we can make neighborhoods and this whole community safe enough place for you.
Al Herring agrees about the necessity of safe places. He's the executive director of the University of Louisville's Muhammad Ali Institute for Peace and Justice. He says creating that space is the first thing a teen has to experience before he or she can move on.
Because we know that when that safe space is created and when young people can begin to talk about what they've experienced, they then can begin to look up and understand that there are options, that they have options, they have opportunities. And then it's our responsibility to help to connect them to those options and opportunities.
One thing they all agree on is that strong, caring, stable adults are needed in the lives of Louisville's at-risk teenagers.
Show some interest in their lives, because young people want us to be interested in their lives. And in order for us to truly bring back this, quote, village that it takes to raise a child, we have to start somewhere, and we've got to start by becoming more interested in the lives of our young people.
Now, you're listening too much to what's going on down here. Concentrate.
There you go. Get on that tree and do it.
There you go.
You have to have adults there who are going to be in there for the long haul with these young people, because oftentimes what happens is when a child is disruptive, especially, they get abandoned by adults because it takes so much work to stay in there with them.
There you go, bro. There you go. There you go. There you go. Don't give up yet, man. Don't give up yet. Go ahead, try.
Here, put your foot right here on the head. Right here. Up a little bit. Up. Right there. Now, put.
All the research shows that if you're going to reach young people on this issue of violence, you firstly have to establish yourself as a safe, caring, aware, and involved adult. And that's where we have to begin.
The Ali Institute's Al Herring adds it's not just a nice thing to do for a young person, it's a responsibility.
Even those young people that are resilient and manage to make it out, they still know that they've walked through hell. And we all as a society, as a culture, know that we're creating hell in our cities, in our inner cities. And the burden of that is inescapable.
Looking for these better days.
For WFPL, I'm Stephanie Sanders.
For information about Operation Hope and many other youth programs in Louisville, or to learn more about teaching peace, visit our website, WFPL.org.
Thinking about better days. Time to question our lifestyle, look how we live. Smoking weed like it ain't no thing. So even kids wanna try now, then lie down and get ran through. Nobody watches them clocking the evil man do. Faced with the demons, addicted to hearing victims screaming. Guess we was evil since birth, product of cursed semen. Cause even our birthdays is cursed days. A born thug in the first place, the worst way. I love to see the block in peace, with no more dealers and crooked cops. The only way to stop the beast, and only we can change. It's up to us to clean up the streets, it ain't the same. Too many murders, too many funerals, and too many tears. Just seen another brother buried, plus I knew him for years. That's by his family, but what could I say? Keep your head up and try to keep the faith, and pray for better days. Better day, better day.
When we come back, WFPL's Laura Ellis brings us information on a possible solution to those cat paw prints on your keyboard. You're in Studio 619 on WFPL. That, believe it or not, is the sound of a cat walking across a computer keyboard. At least it is if you have PawSense, a computer program that can tell when a kitten's on the keys. When PawSense detects cat-like typing, it plays a sound like the one you just heard and blocks input from the keyboard so Fluffy doesn't erase the hard drive. PawSense inventor Chris Nicewander spoke with WFPL's Laura Ellis about how he came up with the idea and how it works.
I guess the most specific inspiration would be my sister. Her cat, Phobos, well, one of her two cats, Phobos, he got on the computer keyboard and kind of squirmed up there and walked around, and it was pretty impressive because in the course of 30 seconds, he managed just by, through random key presses, to delete some files and crash the computer.
Wow.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing. The key to all this is something called keyboard shortcuts. The idea with that, I don't know if you ever use them, but the idea is that, you know, you might be able to hit, say, you know, control something or hit a function key or, you know, alt something in order to do, you know, to execute any of various commands, even in, you know, your typical Windows software, so that you don't have to bother to go reach for the mouse and fiddle around and open up some menu or submenu or whatever. But then when you get this random typing by cats, then the cats sometimes are entering various keyboard shortcuts.
And so they can do a lot of damage with just a few little steps.
Yeah, it's kind of a random thing. Sometimes it won't do any harm, well, unless you have some software open that where you don't want, you know, random, you know, keys, you know, entered at all. You know, like if you have a word processor document, maybe you don't want, you know, random letters, random numbers, whatever entered. But yeah, you know, sometimes just as kind of a random thing, a lot of damage can get done. And, you know, sometimes you're lucky and, you know, no damage gets done.
So how exactly did you tell it how can it tell the difference, basically, between a cat typing and a person typing?
Well, one thing you have to be careful of is you don't want a computer deciding that what you're typing is gibberish necessarily, because someone could be typing in Swahili, you know, they could be typing in some computer language. The Perl programming language is notorious for looking like gibberish to most people who read it, including a lot of programmers. They're like, you know, it's... You write a program in Perl, and you come back 6 months later, and it's like, this looks like gibberish. So instead, the deal is more to analyze the timing of keystrokes, key presses and key releases, and the timing, the relative timing. So if the timing isn't like intentional human typing and isn't like someone saying, oops, I made a mistake with my typing, then you have probably cat typing.
So cats tend to type like more than one key at a time. And
yeah, that's one big factor. More than one key at a time and combinations that a human wouldn't intentionally do.
Now, how did you figure this out? Did you put a bunch of cats on computers and see what they came up with?
Well, there was a stage in testing when I did take cats and, you know, get them to, you know, walk across computers to see what I would get. I guess it was mostly just, I guess it's mostly just that there's combinations, you know, the styles of typing that make sense and ways that don't. So I was just thinking about it. I was just thinking that there's stuff that makes sense and stuff that doesn't, and I wrote up some test software to then actually go to the stage where I would be typing and, you know, having people type, and then, you know, I'd be having cats walking across the keyboard and seeing, you know, making sure that in practice I could actually tell the difference. And in PawSense, you can adjust the sensitivity. There's a sensitivity slider to increase its tolerance for, you know, really for bad typing.
Right.
But nonetheless, I mean, I usually have it running on my computer, and, you know, generally people have it running on their computer. You know, they may be using their computer for, you know, hours, days, and not have a false, you know, false positive, a false detection of what looks like cat typing. But, you know, you can set the sensitivity so it's appropriate for you if you find you have problems.
Right. So when it determines that what is going on is a cat on a keyboard, it plays a sound, and it also kind of shuts off so the cat can't have any more input?
Yes, it blocks the typing from going into whatever program, you know, or operating system interface or whatever you were using. So then it displays on the screen, cat typing detected. And, oh, wait a minute. Let me just make sure that I, you know, no, this looks like yes. Cat-like typing detected. To protect other programs, PawSense is diverting keyboard input. click the button below to close this window, and then you can click on the Let Me Use the Computer button or the Change Settings button.
And it also plays a sound to scare the cat off of the keyboard.
You can choose to have it play sounds if you want, and you can set the volume. That's in the Change Settings. I figure usually, you know, if it comes up and it's doing its thing, that's the moment when someone is either going to say, yeah, I like what it's doing, or they're going to say, hey, you know, there's something about what it's doing that I don't think is quite right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the Change Settings button is right there. So you can click on it, and you can pick various sounds, set the volume, whatever, set the sensitivity. So, yes, there as you mentioned, there are some sounds. And I found that, oh, maybe something like 50% of cats dislike harmonica sounds. So, you know, when I was a kid, if the cats were, you know, say a cat got on the kitchen counter and, you know, was threatening to eat something it wasn't supposed to be eating or something, you know, some people, you know, they'll get a spray bottle with water in it and they'll spray water at the cat. You know, I would, you know, play the harmonica at the cat loudly, and that would usually work. Cats have very sensitive, highly developed musical tastes, so I guess. Although cats vary a lot. Some cats just don't care. Some cats really like some kind of music. My mom, she would be practicing the electric bass, and she used to have this cat, who unfortunately is now expired of old age. But he would really like to, you know, when she was practicing the electric bass, he would run over and he'd sit down right in front of the speaker, you know, for the amp, and he'd be like, boom, 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 you know, getting into this. He also liked to be thumped, gently thumped.
Maybe he thought the bass was like purring at him since it was so rumbly.
Maybe. It's like, yes, she's finally figured out how to purr.
You can also put your own sounds on the software, like if you happen to know that your cat hates a certain thing.
Yeah, if you have a microphone connected to your computer, or if you go out and you buy a microphone, you can probably buy one at any number of electronics and computer stores for, I'm guessing, somewhere between $5 and $10 if you get a cheap one. Then you can record any sound that you think is suitable. Or, for that matter, you could download sounds off the internet, I suppose. Any sound that's in a WAV file format, which is the most common format for sound files on Windows. You know, or you can convert to a WAV file format, which I expect you could do with most sound recording, sound editing software.
Right. What kinds of things have you heard from your customers of the kinds of sounds that they've been using that work?
Well, you know, I really haven't heard from a lot of people who use different kinds of sounds. I guess the current sounds are satisfactory, or maybe they really don't care about the sounds. I mean, if you're happy with just having the typing blocked when it's detected, then you don't even need sounds. You know, you could just turn the volume for the sound all the way. When the volume specific to, you know, pa-sense sounds,
right,
you can turn it down all the way. Or you could use a real quiet sound. One of the sample sounds included with the software is called Not Annoy, and it's just me sitting there saying...
it's just you saying, basically, get off the keyboard, right?
Yes, and what I'm trying to sound as calm and mellow as possible. And one person did say that he thought it sounded like I was, you know, maybe a little stoned or something.
So you're very mellowly saying, you know.
Yeah. But I'm very certain I wasn't stoned at the time. I was just trying to be as non-annoying to the cat.
Right.
Possible.
We respectfully request that you remove your paws from the keyboard, please.
Yeah, something like that would be good.
So I guess if you don't want to use the sounds, you're not really training the cat like to be averse to the keyboard, but it still will protect your work from being destroyed.
Yeah, I think for some people it's more fun just to just to have, you know, observe the cat, you know, getting their computer to react in an appropriate manner. I don't know. There are people in this world who just like to say things like cat-like typing detected in their email messages.
Right. Look, honey, it says cat-like typing detected.
Well, I'm sure glad to know this thing really works.
That never gets old.
Yeah, we you know, when we have parties, the first thing we do is
try to get the cat on the keyboard. Right. The potential for abuse is great, but you did make the sounds annoying to humans also.
That's true. That was important to me. It is important to me that I don't want the computer to be annoying to cats without being reasonably annoying to humans too, in the sense that, you know, I don't want people to be, you know, accidentally tormenting their cats.
Right.
So that's why the sounds kind of annoying to humans too.
And I've seen on your website people are asking if it would work on babies.
Yeah, you know, that really depends on the baby's typing style. If you have a baby, you know, goes over there and just, you know, pounds on the keyboard, then it's almost certainly going to work. And if it doesn't work, then you could use the, you know, full satisfaction, you know, money back guarantee. You've got at least 30 days on that.
Like if the baby's more hunting and pecking.
It's either 30 days or 60 days. I don't remember the official policy. But, yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, cat, you know, humans, children, you know, they watch humans and they imitate humans that are older than them. So, you know, the baby, you know, may start carefully hunting and pecking because the baby observes you hunting and pecking. So
the solution might be learn to type better so that your baby doesn't see you hunting and pecking.
Yes, learn to type fast enough that your baby has trouble following what you're doing.
Right.
Yes.
Are you working on a baby sense?
You know, I haven't. I'm not sure that there's necessarily an established market, but there's also the problem that telling the difference between cat typing and human typing is not too bad. You know, telling the difference between humans, that's kind of hard. People, for decades, you know, for at least three decades, I think, people have been coming up with this idea where they say, you know, different people, you know, surely type differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, you know, different people have differences in their typing styles. But getting it so that you can absolutely tell the difference is very hard. So people have been, you know, there have been research and development groups crowing about how, you know, we get, you know, 90-something percent accuracy in telling the difference between different human beings, which, I mean, it's kind of good if you're looking for a secondary way to, you know, rule out some of the people who copied someone's password. But
right.
It's not the kind of thing that you want, say, you know, access to, you know, the nuclear missile control system to be based on, you know, even just access to, you know, your checkbook.
Yeah, anything important. Because, you know, when it comes down to it, babies are humans and cats aren't.
Yes, well, cats are people, but...
Right, but not human beings. It's the finger and thumb thing, I think, that...
Yeah, their command of written English usually isn't very good.
Right.
Spoken English, you know, sometimes they get okay with that, you know, understanding. Written English usually not. Maybe we need a writing style that, if we wait enough decades, technology may make it very affordable to have, you know, moving text. So we can design an alphabet that's like, you know, different kinds of mice and fish and stuff moving around on the paper. And
sure.
At that point, maybe we'll finally be able to teach cats how to read because they pay attention.
And cats, you know, of course, will evolve too.
Maybe. Genetic engineering is a possibility. Natural evolution is slow, but genetic engineering, it's kind of scary to think, though. You know, cats who can, you know, learn how to drive a car or something. I mean, I'm kind of happy not to have that, actually.
Yeah, I have to say, though, my cats, if they could, they wouldn't bother going anywhere anyway. They would probably just hang out under the table like they do already.
Well, that's good, but, you know, some people don't want to leave, natural human or feline or whatever nature alone.
The same people who say, look, it says cat typing. Look, honey, the cat's driving the car. It's the darndest thing I've ever seen.
Hey, I don't think that's the same at all.
That's the novelty value.
Cat typing is natural cat behavior. It's natural that when you're doing something, that the cat will come over and be like, oh, what's he doing?
Right.
He keeps fiddling with us. Maybe I should, fiddle with it. Or maybe they say, maybe they like feel the warmth coming off your laptop. And they go, oh, this is warm.
Right.
Sit on this.
That's the spot to take a nap.
That's where a lot of people get their cat computer trouble from right there, because their laptop is warm. So if you want to avoid cat trouble, cat typing trouble with your computer, maybe the thing to do is to make sure that you buy the least warm laptop you can find.
Right, and one of those cooling fans or something.
Yeah, you could use Pawsense, of course, but I don't want to say that. I don't want to claim to be the only answer.
one of many options.
Just the most humorous answer, entertaining answer, maybe. And in fact, that's really when that is one of the. I guess that was maybe the irresistible reason behind Pawsense. There's the practical reason that sure, I could see where there were people. There are people. Heck, I knew people. Who would find this useful. But the thing that really made Pawsense irresistible for me as a project was that I just thought it was such a hysterically funny idea, and that there were people who would actually find this helpful in their everyday lives. For me, that just makes the humor stronger.
Right, that the need is there.
Oh, yes.
It's like, it makes you wonder, how many millions of dollars are cats costing people each year?
That's a good question. I like to think that across the world there are people who are trying to get useful stuff done with their computer. Stuff that's of great value to themselves. Maybe even to humanity.
Right, they could be curing diseases.
Yep, and their cats are walking across their computers, erasing their dissertations or something.
Right.
Which actually did happen to someone I knew, but another story. Well, it turned out that the dissertation had been saved under a different file name they didn't expect, just a random one, and then the document had been closed being saved. And having been saved, it was easier for the document to be closed, I guess. So they found it on their hard drive, which is good. But there was a minute or two there where there was things I can't say on the radio.
Right. Well, I have to wonder though if this means we'll never know if enough kitties at enough keyboards would eventually produce the works of Shakespeare.
Well, I guess that's where the genetic engineering possibility comes in.
Well, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
For more information on Pawsense, visit our website at wfpl.org and select Studio 619 from the program list. Unless, of course, you're a cat, in which case...
Get off the keyboard. Get off the keyboard.
That's all the time we have for today's program. For more information about today's show, go to wfpl.org and click on Studio 619. You can email us from there or listen to previous broadcasts in our audio archive. You can also write to us at Studio 619, 619 South 4th Street, Louisville, Kentucky, 40202, or you can reach us by phone at 502-814-6500. Studio 619 is produced by the Public Radio Partnership. Everything you hear on Studio 619 is compiled by the staff at PRP, which includes WFPL, WFPK, and WUOL. We also air submissions from Kentucky Public Radio, a collaboration of all the public radio stations in the Commonwealth. Alice Thompson provides website direction. I'm Rick Howlett. Join us next time for another edition of Studio 619 on WFPL.